Welcome, and this is Monday, July 29th at VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Lots coming up, including Democrats and Republicans defending an African-American congressman and civil rights icon following attacks by the president.
He is someone that cares passionately about his community and has been working tirelessly his entire adult life on behalf of his country.
And the place and date is set for the 50th anniversary of an iconic American music festival. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, there is breaking news out of Northern California. At least five people were hospitalized Sunday after a shooting at an annual food festival. Santa Clara Valley Medical Center has received two victims from the shooting at the Gilroy Garlic Festival and expects three more, according to a spokeswoman. Witnesses to the shooting at the Gilroy Garlic Festival described confusion and panic at the scene. Here's one witness.
Approximately at 5:38 to 5:40, the shooting started. Mm. Just beside the sort of the stage. So he came in from behind and started shooting. There's this big tent where people sat on benches eating, and from what I thought he was shooting up against them, so not directly at us. Towards the right, there was sort of stands where people were selling stuff and so on. I saw one shooter, and I also think that there only was one shooter because I could only hear one gun.
Witnesses also describe the confusion and panic at the scene. And video first posted on social media sites showed people running for safety. The Gilroy Garlic Festival is a nationally known three-day event that attracts thousands of garlic lovers. Sunday was the final day of the festival. A top White House aide is defending President Donald Trump's disparaging tweets about an influential black congressman and his Baltimore, Maryland district. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
President Trump's tweets attacking Congressman Elijah Cummings, calling his Baltimore district dangerous and rat-infested, drew swift condemnation from Democrats. Congressman Jerry Nadler telling ABC's This Week the president was
disgusting and racist.
And his tweets,
they are designed to distract attention from the very serious allegations about his conduct.
Trump's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, denies the comments were racist, but says they do have another purpose, to fight back against Cummings' criticism of the administration's border policy. Still, Republican Congressman Will Hurd says,
I wouldn't be doing those. Right? I wouldn't be tweeting this way.
Hurd also appeared on ABC's This Week. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The Democratic presidential candidates will try to separate themselves from their rivals at the second debate being held in two parts this week in Detroit, Michigan. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, progressive standard bearers Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren will be sharing the stage Tuesday, while frontrunner Joe Biden will likely fend off attacks on Wednesday.
With a clear but shrinking lead in the polls, former Vice President Biden, with other candidates, paid visits last week to African American civil rights groups. Still dominating the news were comments by U.S. President Donald Trump aimed at four minority members of Congress, which Democrats widely criticized as racist. Race became an issue in the Democratic contest when California Senator Kamala Harris questioned Biden's record in debates in Miami in June. They aired on NBC News. One analyst tells VOA to expect more fireworks.
This may be the final chance for a lot of those 20 candidates to make their mark. And the way to do that is by mixing it up with the front runners, being aggressive, and really attacking them.
Biden has also come under attack for supporting a tough 1994 crime bill, which Harris says contributed to the mass incarceration of minorities. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker has echoed the charge, and trailing in the polls may revisit the question. Another analyst says voters want to hear about economic issues.
I think they need to focus on issues like health care or on education policy or on job creation.
He is doing
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who ranks second in most polls, is struggling to keep his lead over fellow progressive rival Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts.
We need a presidential campaign which energizes and excites the American people.
The debate offers a chance for the candidates to speak directly to voters, as they will in coming months, in smaller events around the country. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
A single minute behind closed doors with millionaires and corporate CEOs trying to raise money from them.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The White House belittles calls for President Trump's impeachment. The remaining Iran deal signatories recommit to the 2015 accord. A modern castle built by medieval methods may help reconstruct Notre Dame. And immigration raid won families gripping accounts. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Police in Hong Kong have appealed to people to stay indoors with their windows shut as officers use tear gas to try to drive protesters from the streets. Chaotic scenes filled several blocks in the western part of Hong Kong Island Sunday night, as police pushed protesters back and away from the Chinese government's liaison office and a police station. Reporter Suzanne Sadaline in Hong Kong was out with demonstrators most of the day and night. She talked to VOA Asia's Ira Melman about what was happening and spoke about what led up to Sunday's events.
This started out as a response to the government's prohibition against a march. The government, for the last 2 days, declined to approve two marches. And the protesters went ahead and took part in these actions, even though they were illegal. Now, today, there was approval for a rally in a park. The organizers said 11,000 people. But it was clear from the get-go that people were going to stage a bigger action, people who didn't even go to the rally. And a lot of this stems from the anger over what happened a week ago in this residential slash industrial area that's to the north of Hong Kong near the border with mainland China. And there was a terrible scene of white t-shirted thugs beating people either on trains or on the stairs and in the concourse of a rail station. They knew the police were being slow to respond, but I don't think people realized how slow. And then the police admitted it took them 39 minutes to get there with a sizable enough contingent. And this made people here bananas. So they've felt abandoned by the police. They've felt inaction by the chief executive, Carrie Lam. Not just inaction, indifference. A level of indifference from this government that they've, I don't think they've ever seen before from an earlier administration.
So they had a whole week to have their anger built against the police and the government. So yeah. How did this weekend, especially Sunday night's demonstrations and protests, differ from those that preceded it?
This action that really centered on the western part of Hong Kong Island around the what's called the China Liaison Office. This is Beijing's main representative here in Hong Kong. This was a lot of well-orchestrated action pressing the police to try to get back down to the liaison office, holding a large roadway that they didn't cede for hours, despite many, many rounds of tear gas. And there was repeatedly these kind of older protesters would come back. And the last time I saw this man, he said to them, once you get tear gassed, it's really not a big deal. The plan at one point was we're just going to keep marching west on this main thoroughfare. And I think the dream was that they were just going to keep marching through the tear gas. And then the cops just like started firing like crazy. I don't think they had any great idea what they're going to do when they got down to the liaison office, because after last week, when they threw paintballs at the building and at the national emblem of China, the government now has put, I think they call them Mills barriers. They're very high barriers that they can fill with water, plastic barriers filled with water. And they've now strung these around the perimeter of the liaison office. You can't really get to the liaison office. And they've put a plexiglass cover over the emblems so it can't be defiled again. And I think the idea was this, the people were going to mass in front of the liaison office again. And as one young man told me, liaison office runs Hong Kong now. It's very clear to everyone. She is, Carrie Lam, the chief executive, is taking all her cues from Beijing. She's not listening to the people. She's not really even listening to their other administrative departments of the government. She's certainly not listening to her civil servants. There's growing signs that civil servants are very angry with her, and they've staged very clever protests where they've posted their warrant cards, images of their, basically their IDs on Instagram, and posted them online just as a sign, like a silent protest against this administration. And then a big chunk of the legislature is with the opposition party, so they don't agree with her. So she's lost a lot of support, and where she does get support is from Beijing. And so the kids thought, well, we'll go down and we'll protest outside of the liaison office again, because that's the power center. And so they've managed to hold this road for hours and endure multiple rounds of tear gas again and again and again.
When did this wrap up?
They made it hard for people to get out of there because they closed off three subway stations. So there was a lot of like running around trying to get back toward an area where there was subway service. For some people, it went on longer because they couldn't really get out of there.
That's Suzanne Saveline reporting for VOA with VOA Asia's Ira Melman via Skype in Hong Kong. Two American teenagers have been charged with the alleged killing of an Italian police officer following a drug deal gone wrong. The Northern Californians refused to answer questions from the judge, who nonetheless decided to keep them in custody. Italy is under shock at the violent killing of the officer. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
The two teenagers were staying in a central Rome hotel where police found what they believe is the murder weapon, a long knife that had been hidden in the room's dropped ceiling, along with bloody clothes believed to have been worn during the killing. 19-year-old Finnegan Lee Elder and 18-year-old Gabriel Christian Natal Yorth were high school classmates in the Bay Area of San Francisco and were at the end of their vacation in the Italian capital. Police allege that on Thursday night, the two went to buy some drugs in the area of Trastevere in Rome, but instead of cocaine, they were given a different substance. Furious that they were tricked by the alleged pusher, investigators say the teenagers went back and stole the drug dealer's bag with cash and a cell phone. Witnesses said they appeared intoxicated with alcohol and drugs. The man who suffered the theft reportedly called the police saying he had arranged a meeting with the young Americans to get his bag back. He said the Americans had demanded drugs and money to return the bag. According to the authorities, two officers in plain clothes decided to go to the meeting set up with the young Californians instead of the alleged pusher. Although the police officers identified themselves as carabinieri, witnesses said a scuffle ensued, with one of the teenagers punching one of the officers and the other drawing a long knife and stabbing the other officer 8 times. According to an initial autopsy, 35-year-old Vice Brigadier Mario Cercello Rega died of massive loss of blood when he arrived at the hospital. Investigators say Finnegan Lee Elder, the youngster who allegedly stabbed the policeman, confessed to the killing when he was taken to the police station after their arrest. But both teenagers have refused to answer questions from the preliminary investigations judge, who has nonetheless decided they will remain in custody at the Regina Coeli prison in Rome. They are charged with murder and attempted extortion, and the investigation continues. The body of the killed police officer will lie in repose in a chapel in central Rome on Sunday. The funeral will be held Monday in Somma Vesuviana, near Naples.
The town's mayor, Salvatore Di Sarno, asked that judges be uncompromising because they killed a man like animals. Others in his hometown are shocked by what happened. The officer, who was known by many, was described as a kind man, an exceptional person who was always ready to help others and was involved in charity work with the homeless. This man said, there are no words to describe the person that he was and how he behaved and how he will always be remembered. Italians across the country are in disbelief over the violent killing believed to have been carried out by these young men. Killings of Carabinieri police officers are a rare occurrence, and authorities have vowed that justice will be done. The family of Elder, the alleged stabber, issued a statement saying, "We are shocked and dismayed at the events that have been reported, but we have very little independent information about these events." They added that they had not had any communication with their son. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Well, the UN World Food Program says it plans to double food rations to assist 440,000 people affected by the Ebola virus and their contacts over the next 6 months in response to escalating needs in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The dramatic scale-up of food assistance is aimed at providing essential nutritional support to thousands of people affected by the Ebola virus. Recipients will receive food for 28 days. This is 1 week longer than the 21-day incubation period, the time interval from infection with the virus to onset of symptoms. The World Food Program says the operation also will allow agencies working to contain the deadly virus to keep tabs on the health situation of contacts of victims and their families, as well as of confirmed and suspected cases. WFP spokesman Hervé Verhoosel explains beneficiaries of this expanded program will be required to come to specific distribution sites every week to pick up their food rations.
That help us and that help WHO and the government to have those people coming to the health center where they receive the food. And when they receive the food, the health team can make the medical check needed in that 21 days period.
Verhoosel says people who have been infected by the Ebola virus and who have recovered will receive food rations for 1 year. The WFP spokesman says the operation is running into some problems of acceptance because of community mistrust. He says people affected by Ebola often are stigmatized by their neighbors, and some beneficiaries have been threatened because they are seen as posing risks to the community. To encourage community cooperation, he says WFP is planning to quadruple the number of primary schools in Ebola-affected areas that will receive nutritious hot lunches. He says chronic malnutrition is rife in this area, and for many children, this is the main or only meal of the day. He says the number of children slated to receive school meals will rise from 17,000 to 70,000. Verhoosel says WFP urgently needs $50 million over the next 6 months to carry out its operation in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces, as well as in neighboring Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Tech-savvy farmers in Nigeria are using a farming technique known as aeroponics, in which plants are grown in moisturized air. The practice isn't well known in Nigeria, but those engaged in this kind of agriculture are on a mission to make it more popular. As Timothy Obeza reports from the town of Abeokuta, the technique is useful in a country where violence and desertification has made huge amounts of farmland unusable.
Samson Oboli is popularly known as Nigeria's smart farmer. He and his team are growing crops without soil at this tech-based farm they began in 2016. They're on a mission to make food available in Nigeria all year round.
Because we are the one controlling everything that the plant requires, we are not depending on season. So it's no longer seasonal farming. It is just farming any time of the year, meaning you can plant any time of the year, we can harvest any time of the year.
But there were challenges starting off the smart farm.
We are called wizards, demons, that we are doing something unnatural. So it took a whole lot to try to convince people that there is nothing demonic about what we are doing.
Only about 30 million hectares of farmland in Nigeria is being cultivated instead of 78.5 million hectares needed for food security. Widespread communal clashes, insurgency and desertification in the north are the top reasons arable land is lost. And only 49% of the cultivated land is fertile, a situation that worries traditional farmers like Abubakar Ibrahim.
I don't have any other place that I will go and be farming again, apart from here. And here already the land has gotten weak. We just manage it for us not to stay like that.
But aeroponics farmers like Oboli hope to make a headway with their methods. The smart farm does not require weeding or pest control. Nutrients for the plants are automatically regulated in a recycling system, greatly increasing productivity.
One very good thing that's actually very important, particularly when you're using it for yam or for cassava, you discover that you can rapidly multiply the planting materials. You'll be able to, within a small time, be able to rapidly multiply planting materials that you can use outside there. So it's one of those new technologies that we are even promoting.
Nigeria's agricultural sector contributes about 40% of the country's economic activities. The government wants to expand this percentage substantially, but Nigerian farmers lack the technical know-how to enhance productivity and do not have access to high-quality seeds to guarantee better harvests. Tech-savvy farmers like Oboli are offering an alternative. Timothy Obiezu, for VOA News in Abeokuta, Nigeria.
Rapper Jay-Z is pulled out of the 50th anniversary Woodstock Festival just weeks before the troubled event is supposed to take place. He'll no longer close the three-day festival scheduled for next month. The news comes on the same day that John Fogerty, who performed at the original 1969 festival with Creedence Clearwater Revival, pulled out of the anniversary event. Woodstock 50 has faced a series of setbacks in the last few months, including permit denials and a loss of financial partner and a production company. Organizers also say they are changing venues. The festivities were supposed to take place across three main stages at Watkins Glen International Racetrack in Washington, D.C., or in Watkins Glen, New York, but the venue pulled out. Bloomberg News is reporting that the event will now take place at the Meriwether Post Pavilion, an outdoor amphitheater that seats 19,000 people in Columbia, Maryland, some 270 miles south of the original New York site. The original Woodstock was a festival pushing the message of peace, love, and music. Was a seminal, groundbreaking event in 1969 that featured performances by Jimi Hendrix, The Grateful Dead, Joan Baez, The Who, and other iconic acts. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom, or USERF, is an independent, bipartisan advisory body created by the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998. Its mandate is to monitor religious freedom abroad and make policy recommendations to the President of the United States. USERF Commissioner Anurima Bhargava noted in a recent webinar that Burma remains a country of particular concern. She said it is a place where there are systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. USERF Deputy Director for Research and Policy, Tina Mufford, explained that in Burma, one's ethnic identity is intricately related to one's religion and language.
So if you are not the majority Burman ethnicity, if you're not the majority Buddhist religion, you are at an inherent disadvantage compared to those who are.
The State Department's 2018 report on International Religious Freedom and Human Rights Report document ongoing human rights abuses following the ethnic cleansing against the Rohingya that took place in 2017 and resulted in the displacement of more than 740,000 refugees to Bangladesh. Rohingya who remain in Burma continue to face an environment of particularly severe repression and restrictions on freedom of movement and access to education, health care, and livelihoods based on their ethnicity, religion, and citizenship status, according to the United Nations and non-governmental organizations. Investigations of the 2017 ethnic cleansing in northern Rakhine State corroborated accounts of systematic abuses and a campaign against Rohingya civilians that involved extrajudicial killings, rape, and torture. In November 2017, the secretary determined that the situation in northern Rakhine State constituted ethnic cleansing against the Rohingya. Senior U.S. government officials continue to raise concerns about discrimination against religious minorities, the treatment of Rohingya, and conditions in Rakhine State. The United States has sanctioned 5 generals and 2 military units for human rights violations against ethnic and religious minorities. Speaking at the release of the 2018 report on international religious freedom, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had a warning for those who continue to trample on religious liberty.
For all those that run roughshod over religious freedom, I'll say this. The United States is watching, and you will be held to account.
History will not be silent about these abuses.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is